Welcome to iTrust, the teaching ministry of Fellowship Bible Church, Texarkana, Texas. Fellowship Bible Church exists to help believers and seekers become fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ. Following is a message delivered by Andy Tuttleby, our student pastor here at Fellowship Bible Church. We trust that it'll be beneficial to your walk with Jesus Christ.
Well, what I've called this morning's sermon is Disciple Making, a Master Class, because we are going to learn from the Master. In 2009, a guy called Dan Spader, who runs a youth ministry organization in the States, wrote a book called Four Chair Discipling. And my sermon this morning is based largely on this book. I used it for our Falls Creek messages this past summer as well. And there's some really good concepts in here that we can learn from the life of Christ about how to go about discipling. He uses four chairs, which is why he calls it four chair discipling. And each chair represents a different stage or phase of the discipling process. I'm not going to use chairs. I'm going to bypass all of the chair stuff. So just imagine there are chairs with illustrations on, but I've got some graphics that will help you guys just see what each stage is and as we go through that. The premise is basically this, that as followers of Christ, we are called not only to become fully devoted followers or disciples ourselves, but we are called to become disciples who are capable and who are actively working towards making disciples of our own. Does that make sense? So we're called to be disciples who are making disciples. That way everything perpetuates itself as the whole idea of multiplication rather than just addition. What does it mean to make disciples? Well, basically a disciple is a follower. One who follows, emulates, imitates, and learns from his teacher or master. In the church, this has often been portrayed or at least interpreted as a type of intense Bible study or Bible teaching program designed to simply educate and grow leaders within the church. We often think of discipleship, and I don't know if you're like me, but you think of the 6 a.m. breakfast, prayer breakfast. And I'm like, can we do a prayer lunch? Like, do we have to meet at 6 a.m. when no one's awake? Sort of thing. But we tend to think of this whole discipleship process as this very intense, very deliberate, one-on-one meeting separately, open the Word of God and dive into deep theological truth. And there's certainly a place for that, and that is certainly one aspect of that. When I was a teenager, I had a youth pastor who discipled me, and we met together once a week and worked through. There was a book called Disciples Are Made, Not Born, that we read through each week and we discussed. And it was the two of us. And after, I don't remember much of anything that was in the book, but what I remember is that relationship. I remember the time that I spent with my youth pastor that he wanted to invest in me. I think the book was very helpful. It had some really good biblical principles in there. It set me on my way as a disciple of Christ. But the most important part, as far as I was concerned, was I got to hang out with Mike. In many ways, I think that's what discipling should be. Yes, the Bible is involved. Yes, teaching is involved. But it's more of a relationship. Like Dan Spader and the way he explains it in his book, I would tend to see myself of a more of an anyone can cook type of disciple philosophy. If you remember Ratatouille the movie, and I think it was Chef Gusteau, had this theory that anyone can cook. That's a horrible accent, I know, but I promise I won't do that again. Okay, but he had this idea, this concept that anyone could cook. Now, he didn't have a rat in mind when he said that, but his whole idea was that the people had got this impression that cooking was for the experts, the trained. The rest of us just needed to steer clear and just, you know, show up at the restaurant and eat. But his whole theory, his whole philosophy was, look, anyone can do this. This isn't a science, this is art. Experiment, try it, learn it, just dive in. And if you mess it up, so what? Try something different next time. I kind of am more of that kind of philosophy with regards to discipling. I think we have this tendency in the church to think that discipleship, this whole one-on-one intense relationship, is for the experts, for the paid people. The rest of us, we're the ones who come and get discipled, and then we go home, and if we're lucky, we actually go home as disciples. But the whole disciple-making idea, that's not for us. I fully disagree. I really think Chef Gusteau was onto something. Anyone can disciple. Anyone can make disciples. You don't have to have it all figured out. You don't have to have all the answers. It's simply a passing along of what you have currently learned. So whatever information you have gained in walking with Christ, discipling is simply putting yourself in a position to pass that along to someone else who hasn't experienced it or hasn't learned that yet. Or maybe is just going through a tough time and needs the encouragement of things that you learned from a tough time that you were going through. Disciple making is life on life. It's relationship. It's in the trenches, shoulder to shoulder, side by side, going through life together. It's the ups and downs, the highs, the lows. Caring for, crying with, loving, grieving, rejoicing with someone as life happens. It's a sharing thing. Not just a sharing of knowledge, but a sharing of life. I want to give you guys an example that hopefully will help to bring this concept within reach a little bit. And so Grant's going to help me out with this. And so I'm going to give you an analogy from my student pastor / ping pong enthusiast world. So Grant, if you can come and help me out with this. And I left my water bottle here so I can take a little swig before we start. You ready? You look like you're taking this seriously. Go easy, because I got to talk. No, you're fine. No, we're not going to go crazy. You're good. We're just going to knock the ball back and forth a little bit while we talk. I want to introduce you to someone. Meet Braden McDaniel. He should be popping up on the screen behind me there. The first picture you see is kind of like the before, and the second picture is like the after. In the first picture, that was him while he was in youth group, and the second picture is him probably about 2 or 3 years ago as a fire controlman in the Navy. About 9 years ago, Braden started attending youth group. His grandmother used to drag him along, and I mean drag him along. He did not want to be there. Braden didn't particularly fit in initially. He wasn't like all the other good Christian kids. He hadn't grown up in a little Christian bubble. He had no idea what any of that was. He had a bit of a rough upbringing, which is why he lived with his grandmother, and his grandmother was essentially raising him. And honestly, there was times at the beginning where you could tell Braden didn't really even want to be there. And so as a good youth pastor, I tried to figure out a way to connect with Braden. Well, I used to find him almost every week at the beginning of youth group. He'd kind of sneak in while I wasn't looking, and he'd go into the pool room, and he'd sit on a chair and watch as the other kids played ping pong or pool. But he was especially interested in ping pong. He would just sit there and stare at it for as long as we would let him before youth group officially started. Well, after a while, I noticed his interest. I sensed his keenness to play. And so I started inviting him to come, come on, play with me. And he's like, what, me? I'm like, yeah, come on. And so he'd come out, and he was not very good. And so I would have to go easy on him, which honestly, I went easy on most of the kids. What most of the kids don't realize is that I had a bit of a misspent youth where ping pong was a huge part of it. I was in a ping pong club for a number of years. I played tournaments in ping pong. I was on the B team of our Boys Brigade ping pong club. And I actually got to play with the A team a couple of times too. I did ping pong a lot. And so I would play with Braden, and I would just be going easy on him just to let him get the groove and feel comfortable. Over time, and it didn't take him long, he showed a real aptitude for it. And he started figuring out. He started getting better. He started being able to return things. And then our relationship changed where he started to pick my brain. He'd be like, whoa, what was that shot you just did? What on earth? How did you put that much spin on it? Whoa, that's just crazy. How did you get that back? And after a while, those questions then started turning into actual seeking of answers. How can I do that? How do I put that kind of spin on a ball? And so I would start teaching him. I'd start just giving him some ideas of things that I had done and things that I did to the ball or whatever else. And he would then start using those on poor, unsuspecting youth group members. And it was so much fun watching him as he improved to start. And he started off with the 7th and 8th graders. And after a while, he could just cream all of those guys. So then he moved up onto the high schoolers, up to the 9th graders. And as an 8th grader, he would take on the 9th graders and the 10th graders. And after he worked his way through them, he started moving up to the seniors. Now, the seniors are too cool to play ping pong. They always hung out in the kitchen because they just wanted to talk. But every now and then, he would be able to convince a senior to go into the pool room with him and play him in a game of ping pong. And at first, he was just out of his depth, but it didn't take him long before he started figuring things out. And then our conversations as we were talking, they changed from just shot selection and how to do certain shots to strategy. How to play with the mind of your opponent while you're playing. Things like announcing your score. When you want a point, you announced your score first, loudly. When they want a point, nothing. That worked out really well, Grant. That was good. And then if you won 2 or 3 points in a row, you'd start emphasizing their lack of progression. Like if they were stuck at 15 points, you'd emphasize 15 still. Now I'm at 16, 15, 17, 15, 18, 15, and it would get into. So I started teaching him all of these little things, all these little tricks, how to control your emotions, all of this sort of stuff, till the point where he was basically able to beat pretty much anybody in the youth group. It got to the point where he beat me once or twice, but he got close a number of times and didn't realize that he had me totally on the ropes. He had me. He was up by 4 or 5 points, and he had just 2 points left to go in the game. And I was like, man, I'm toast. He's got me. He's gotten better than I have. But I had learned to control my emotions, and so I never let him see. He never knew. And so I'd often pull out a lot of those games, and I'd end up winning them. And he just assumed I'd just been toying with him the whole time. I didn't correct him. But ping pong became our thing. It became the thing that connected him to youth group. It became the thing that connected him to me. One time towards the end of his time at youth group, he made the observation. He said, hey, I'm like your Padawan. You're my Jedi master of ping pong. And I responded back to him. I said, well, Braden, that's great. And you're right. That's really funny, actually. I said, but you know what? I said, my goal has not been just to be your Jedi master of ping pong. My objective through all of this, and through the years you've been now attending youth group and coming to youth group, is to be your Jedi master of your walk with Christ. To which he responded to him, he says, and you have been. His senior year, Braden's brother died in a tragic car accident, and it threw him for a loop. He stopped coming to youth group, and I didn't really honestly see him that much after that. But I've been in touch with him just over the last year or so, and he seems to be doing pretty well. He's done well for himself. I say he did finish a 5-year stint as fire controlman in the Navy, and he seems to be in really good shape. That's good, Grant. We'll stop there while I move out. I don't want to talk too long because I got an actual sermon to preach on top of all this. So I could play all day. But he seems to be doing really quite well for himself right now. He did about a 5-year stint as a fire controlman in the Navy, living in San Diego. I say the death of his brother threw him for a loop, but he's come back around. Why the ping pong? To some degree, and I wanted to end it with what I said, what he said there about me being his Jedi master of ping pong. I never set out for that. I just wanted to try to find a way to connect with him to keep him coming back to youth group so he could hear the lessons and he could hear the word of the Lord and hopefully then begin to get through to him. But in the process of our ping pong playing, we talked about all sorts of stuff. But how does that all tie in? In many ways, the ping pong illustration is a perfect illustration of what discipling is. I was discipling him on how to play ping pong. He was my ping pong disciple, as it were. And what happened was initially we just started playing, but over time he started to pick my brain and he wanted to know what I knew. And I didn't realize just how much experience I had initially until he started asking more and more questions and it started thinking, wow, I've done this a lot. And I actually know a lot more about how to play and what the ins and outs of it than I think I do. And it was a lot of fun being able to pass that knowledge on to him. Discipleship in terms of the church is exactly the same thing. It's finding someone, or maybe a whole series of people, or just in our everyday relationships, to pass on what you know. When you find people who are in situations who need some guidance or need some nudging or encouragement or whatever it is, and we have experienced that, we pass on what we have learned. Dan Spader in his book talks about how we want to be disciples who are capable of making disciples. It's not just for the experts. Watching Braden was fascinating because part of the way that he got better was to teach other kids in the youth group what he had learned from me so that they could give him a better game. And in the process, he was discipling them, at least in ping pong. Okay? And that's kind of how it works. So here's what we're going to do. The overview of the process that we're going to look at. First thing we're going to look at, and we'll get to this in a second, is Dan Spader labels the chair as come and see. And that's for seekers, those who are seeking. Entry level. Okay, the second one is follow me, and that's for those of us who are believers. Third step is follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And that's the worker phase. And then the last one, go and bear fruit, which is the friends / disciple maker phase. So we're going to start at the beginning. Let's look at the come and see real quick. And I'm going to try not to spend too long to try to work through this pretty quickly because there's a lot here. But if you have your Bibles, open to John chapter 1:35 through 42. It's entitled, John's Disciples Follow Jesus. This is about John the Baptist. The next day, John the Baptist was there again with two of his disciples, two of those who were following him. And when John saw Jesus passing by, he said, look, or behold, the Lamb of God. And when the two disciples heard him say this, they left John and they started following Jesus. Now, that following word there is a literal word. That literally means they walked behind. That's not a nice, good spiritual code for they surrendered their lives to or anything like that. It literally means they left John and they walked after Jesus to see where he was going. Jesus, noticing that they're following him, he turns around and he saw them following. He says, what do you want? They said, Rabbi, which means teacher, where are you staying? He says, come, he replied, and you will see. So they went and they saw where he was staying, and they spent that day with him. It was about the 10th hour, about 4 in the afternoon. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed after Jesus. And the first thing that Andrew did was to go find his brother and tell him, we have found the Messiah, that is the Christ. And he brought Simon Peter to Jesus. This first phase, this first step of come and see, is essentially an invitation by Jesus given to two of his early disciples, Andrew and John. When they encounter Jesus for the first time, these guys are disciples of John the Baptist. John the Baptist's role was to pave the way for the Christ. So they obviously knew what they'd learned from John, what the Christ would look like, what the Messiah would look like. They were dialed in on that. They were looking for the Messiah. And so when John the Baptist says, this is him, they were like, adios. And they followed after Jesus. They walked along the road. And initially, there's nothing special happening. They're literally just following at a distance. Jesus notices that someone is behind him and turns around and says, what do you want? Now, the scripture's great because it never gives you the tone with which it was asked. Like, it could have been what do you want? Like, stop following me. I highly doubt that because this was Jesus and he wanted people to follow him. So I doubt that's how it came across. But it's a simple enough question. What are you looking for? What do you want? But there's incredible depth to the question. I don't think these two have a clue what Jesus is actually asking them. Because their response to him is just, where are you staying? Like, where's your base of operations? How can we find you again in the future? Jesus' response is brilliant. He says, come check it out. Come and see. Come and get your first taste. You think I'm the Messiah? Come let me show you. And so it says they've spent from about 4 in the afternoon, and they spent the rest of the day with him. Now, the rest of the day, probably what, sunset, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, I don't know where it is in Israel, but they've probably spent at least 2, 3, 4 hours with him, maybe even longer. We're not told what they talk about. It's not listed or mentioned at all in here. But they spend time with Jesus. By the end of it, it basically tells us that they are convinced. In fact, they're so convinced that one of them, Andrew, goes finds his brother Simon Peter and says, "I found him. The Messiah that we've been looking for, we've been following John, he's been paving, we found him." And Simon Peter's like, okay. And he's like, look, come and see. It's a brilliant illustration of this whole idea of disciples making disciples. And at this stage, we're at the entry level, just come and check it out. But Andrew goes, checks it out, becomes convinced, and then brings his brother to do what? Check it out. I see this happening within youth group especially. It's incredibly powerful. You'll get a kid who does not know Christ, is not from a church background, will come to youth group, and will just like what he sees. There's something going on that he's like, I need this. He may not even be at the point where he's actually ready to accept it yet. He might not even know that he has to do anything to accept what Christ has done for him. He may not have even heard that part yet. But he knows that there's enough going on at the youth group with the rest of the kids and the way they conduct themselves and treat one another and everything else. He's like, this is a good place. And he'll show up the next week, and what will he have done? He'll have brought a friend. And oftentimes, the kids who do the most outreach are the new ones. The ones who have been there a long time, oftentimes they don't even have so many non-Christian friends anymore because they've just, they've solidified and they've got these close friendships that they've had for so long within the church that those are the ones they hang out with. And it's not a criticism, it's just what it is. But the new ones, their friends are in the same boat that they are. They're looking for something and they just don't know what it is. They see, they find something that this is it. I like this. I want what they're spreading and passing along. And they'll bring someone else with them to come along and check it out for themselves as well. It's a simple invitation. Come and see with your own eyes. This is discipleship at its finest. And it's the first step along the process. A similar thing happens with the woman at the well. You guys know the story in John 4. Jesus spends some time talking with the woman at the well. By the time he's done, what does she do? She runs into the town and tells everyone she comes into contact with, she says, come see a man who just told me everything I ever did. She brings other people to Jesus. Come and see. Simple invitation, very entry-level process, but it's the first step to this disciple-making process. The first step for us was that we had someone who introduced us to Christ. We came and saw. We liked what we saw. We pursued it a little further, and somewhere along the way, it clicked for us. It made sense, and we're like, that's for me. I need to choose Christ. That's how it happens with everyone. As I'm going through this sermon, it's a little tricky in some ways, because on one level, this is what happened with us. This is how it happens with those going forward. But also, you'll see as we go through this process, there's going to be three more screens that pop up here. And essentially, by the time you get to the end, we're called to go back to the beginning. But not to go back to the beginning ourselves, in the sense that we need to come and see, but we're now bringing others to come and see. And it doesn't have to wait till we get to the end before we start that process. It's all this cyclical thing going on all the time, so that we may be in different phases of this at any one time and still reaching out. Like I said already, some of the come and seers were the ones that were bringing others to come and see. It's this ongoing process. Dan Spader sums it up like this. He says, this simple challenge was built upon the premise that God the Father is drawing people to himself. John 6:44 says that no one can come to me unless the Father who draws them brings them. Okay? God is drawing people to himself, and it's up to us to a certain degree to, like Jesus, kind of notice those who are hovering around, asking questions, seem inquisitive, and then say, hey, look, come check it out. And that come check it out is, it might be as simple as come to church with me. It might be come to a Bible study with me. It might be, hey, come on the men's retreat or the women's if conference gathering is happening this weekend. It might be, hey, just come, why don't you bring you and your family, come to dinner with us. And see how we as believers interact. And you don't have to put on a big show. Just live your life in front of them. It may be, look, let's spend more time together. And as you spend more time and you develop this relationship with them, they start seeing Christ in you and living that transparently in front of them. And they may spend, this process may take months, years, where they are seeing and not even understanding what it is that they're looking at, but slowly but surely getting drawn in. And at some point, the prayer is, the hope is that they understand what it is that they're seeing. They see Christ for who he is, and they make a decision to accept him. The second phase is follow me. And this is for those of us who have already made that transition to accepting Christ. This is an ongoing call, an ongoing challenge from Christ for us. It requires commitment. It's an ever-growing and deepening commitment as we grow closer to Christ. Going back to the ping pong analogy real quick, this happened slowly with me and Braden. I've already kind of talked about it, but in many ways it went from the come and see where he then started to play. And as we started to play together, he obviously liked what he was doing. He enjoyed it. And there was a sense from me watching him that he had a desire to improve. He wanted to get better at it. And I've picked that up really quickly when he started asking questions that were not just random stuff. There was I want to know how you did that. I want to know how that happens. Why does the ball spin that way when you're doing this? How do you flick your wrist like that? What are you doing? And he just wanted to do it so he could get the ball back and so that he could play better against me. But after a while, there became this desire to improve as a ping pong player. And he started picking my brain anytime he could. He came early to youth group and wanted to play with me. He would stay late to youth group and play with me. For the longest time, I'm pretty sure his grandmother thought youth group ended at 9 o'clock rather than 8. Because he would tell her to come at 9. And she would show up at 9, and pretty much he was the last kid left. And she was like, oh, I'm so sorry, am I a little late? I'm like, no, you're fine. You're like an hour late, but it's been good. And he would improve and learn, and he practiced. Anything he learned from me, he practiced on somebody else until he perfected it. And he got good in a hurry. It was fun. Jesus calls us in many ways in the same way to follow him with that same level of enthusiasm. It's this continual. It's not a one time. We tend to think of following Jesus as the day I chose to follow Christ. I became a Christian on this day, and I'm now a follower of Christ. Well, not necessarily. You might be a quote-unquote follower of Christ, but are you actually following Christ? Because that following process is a ever-deepening level of commitment. Christ is going to challenge us at every level. There are going to be circumstances that come in our lives. There's going to be Bible teaching that challenges us. There's going to be people we come alongside and go, wow, they're on a different stratosphere to me spiritually. There's a growth and maturity there that I don't have. How do I emulate that? How do I get to that? And this following process is ongoing. If you have your bulletin, I'm just going to whip through these really quickly here. But John 1:43 talks about, and this is right after Andrew and John, and they get Simon Peter. Philip is one of these ones who comes to Jesus. Jesus goes and finds Philip, and the same sort of thing, come and see. Philip is convinced. What does he do? He goes, finds Nathanael. And in verse 47 through 50, Nathanael comes before Jesus, and Jesus announces, here's a guy who is full of truth. And Nathanael looks around and goes, okay, how on earth do you, what? How do you know me? There's no way you can possibly know me. Now, I think the way Jesus knew is simple enough. When Israelites studied, they studied under the fig trees for shade. And the assumption is that Jesus had walked past Nathanael and seen him studying under the fig tree. And so this is a guy who's searching for truth. Probably wasn't too supernatural, although Jesus had a bit of a heads up than the rest of us. He would have known what was going on in Nathanael's heart. But Nathanael is blown away. And Jesus says to him, follow me and you'll see far more things better than this. You think this is good? This is nothing. This is just scratching the surface. He said, look, there's more. Follow me. Come deeper. In Matthew 9, it talks about how Jesus called Matthew or Levi, the tax collector. And there was a call to leave your past life. Leave your life behind. Leave the way you have been conducting yourself behind and follow me. And there was processes, I'm sure, and steps that Matthew had to go through to follow Jesus. Later on, it talks about how Jesus spent time with Matthew at his house. This is before Matthew fully makes a commitment to Christ. And the other Pharisees are there judging Jesus and looking at Jesus because of this woman who comes in and pours stuff on Jesus' feet. Probably the other disciples that were there are still like, what is going on here? But in the process, Jesus is calling him, look, this is how I treat people. Come follow me. And Matthew leaves everything behind. In Matthew 4:19, which we'll talk about a little bit, Jesus says, come follow me and I will make you fishers of men. This is not, we tend to think this is the original call for these disciples. It was probably a further along in the process, a deeper call. And they're called to leave their father, their business, their livelihood behind and go into ministry with Christ. In Matthew 10, Jesus sends out the 12 for ministry. And he says, anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. Again, a deeper level of commitment. We talked about this at Falls Creek, and one of the things I said to our students, I said, look, most of you honestly have never really had to worry too much about this passage, because your parents have raised you to follow Christ. And so you're not leaving your father and mother to follow Christ. You're actually obeying your father and mother as you learn to follow Christ. But then they got to see an example of what this looks like really clear for them. Delia's friend Sapana, who is a Hindu little girl, gave her life to Christ. The first thing she said when she came back from going down and praying the prayer of acceptance, she came back with a big smile on her face, and everyone was there around to celebrate with her and be excited for her. And she went, now I just have to tell my parents. And it was not an easy process. It's still not an easy process for her. And she literally, figuratively, was turning her back on the way her parents had raised her to follow Christ. And she knew that they would not take it well. Tough decision. And that was the beginning of the process for her. Was to loving Christ more than her father and her mother. Crazy. John 10:27 talks about how my sheep hear my voice. I know them and they follow me. It's a mark of a true believer that we know the voice of God and we're listening for it and following it as we go through life. In John 21, it talks about the process of Jesus restoring Peter. I haven't got time to spend super amounts of time in all of these. But Peter has denied Christ three times right before the crucifixion. After the crucifixion, Jesus appears on the beach while they're out fishing, and they've basically gone back to their former way of life. Peter sees this figure and figures out who it is and comes back, and around the fireplace, Jesus asks him a series of questions, and he starts off, he said, Peter, do you love me? And Peter said, Lord, you know I love you. Don't ask me that. Jesus asks him, it says to him, feed my sheep, feed my lambs. He follows it up with another one. He says, do you love me? And Peter's like heartbroken. He's like, Lord, why are you asking me this? And again, third time, Jesus says, do you love me, Peter? Well, Jesus wasn't doing it to break his heart. What Jesus was doing was restoring him back. He denied him three times, and now he had committed and declared his love for Christ three times. He restored him and forgiven him and brought him back into the fold. Jesus' words after this was like, now follow me. This is right before Christ ascends to heaven. This isn't the beginning part of the process. This is an ongoing continuation of the process. And even when we get off track, he restores us back and says, now, start again. Follow me. Continue in the way that I've been leading you. It's a whole series of calls for deeper and continued or renewed commitment. Spader describes it this way. He says, come and see assumes curiosity. Follow me requires commitment. The third one I want to get into is the I will make you fishers of men. This is the worker phase. At this stage, our relationship with Christ has moved to the point where we are now starting to take on responsibility for the kingdom going forward. Jesus says to his disciples in Matthew 4:19, come follow me and I will make you fishers of men, or I will send you out to fish for people. And they left their nets and they went with him. from this passage on, that's in Matthew 4, 18 through 22. If you look at Mark chapter 1, and the same Matthew 4 passage is in Mark chapter 1 at the beginning of verse 16 or so. But starting at verse 21 all the way through chapter 2, verse 17, and I'm not going to hit all of these because it'll take us all day. But there's a series of what Dan Spader calls fishing trips that Jesus takes his disciples with him on. And then there's a series of fishing trips that he sends them on by themselves. And then they come back and they report back to him. And essentially what Jesus is doing is he is training them to do what he has been doing in them. As they've been with him and they've heard him teach, and then they've come back and say, okay, what did you mean by that? What's going on? That was a great parable, but I didn't get it at all. And then Jesus would explain to them, as they have grown in their following of him, as they've grown closer to him and learned what it is he's about, he now starts sending them on this training mission. And he goes on a series of mission trips. Mark chapter 1, 21 through 28, he goes to the synagogue, and while he's there, a demon-possessed man comes out and basically outs Jesus as the Messiah in front of everyone. Jesus casts out the demon, and news spreads. The ministry has begun. Everyone's hearing now. The disciples watched and learned. What did they learn? This guy has authority. Check. Got it. Jesus is not your average just person that you're following. Jesus is the Son of God. He's got authority over demons. They then go to Peter's home, and he heals Peter's mother-in-law. A couple of things here. Number one, your mother-in-law is important. Okay? But secondly, family. This following me business starts at home. It begins at home. If you're not living it at home, there's no point in going out on missions anywhere else. It goes from there, he goes to the friends and the neighbors. He starts spreading out. And these guys have to then deal with, I've chosen to follow Christ, but now everyone I know is knowing that I'm following Christ. There's a different level of, ooh, okay, it's one thing for me to do it, but if I can keep that hidden, that's okay. But now, boom, it's out there. At one point, he withdraws and he prays, kind of refuels for the next ministry. Prayer is important. Check. They're making mental notes as they go along, and they're learning how to do ministry. There's a whole series of other ones. Jesus heals a man with leprosy. And they learn that as followers of Christ, we're to be the spiritual firefighters, the spiritual police. We run into where everyone else is running out of. The lepers were just ostracized from society. Jesus goes and heals them. He rushes in when everyone else rushes out. And they're like, okay, no one is exempt from this message. We need to bring it everywhere. Later on, they see Jesus forgiving a paralyzed man and then healing him so he can walk. And they're like, this is a whole nother. This guy forgives. This guy has the authority to forgive sin. Okay, check. Learning that too. And they learn a whole series of things along the way. And as they go, they pick up other disciples. At this stage, the disciples are still starting to 4 or 5, and they're beginning to grow. At the end of it, in verse 17, Jesus tells them, he said, it's not the healthy that need a doctor, but the sick. He has basically spent time walking them through a process where they have been able to watch him do the ministry. It's the whole I do, you watch and learn approach. And then he turns it around and said, all right, now it's your turn. You guys are going to go out in pairs. I'm not going to send you out by yourself. You're still figuring this out. Go out 2 by 2, and you do what you just saw me do. And then come back and report. And when they come back, they report about everything they've seen and heard, everything they were able to do. Their minds are blown. They're excited. They're confused about some things. And Jesus then kind of talks them through what they should do better. Next time, kick the dust off your sandals and go to a different town. Or next time, you have the authority for this. I've given it to you, or whatever else. And they learned as they went, and their ability to minister grew. Their ability to be the worker grew. Same thing happened with Braden as we played ping pong. As he improved, and the more he improved and learned and got better and better, the more things he picked up from me, the more he was able to then pass that along to the other students so that they would get good enough to give him a good enough game and that he could continue to improve. And he would watch and learn from me, and then he would practice it and put it into practice. We're called to do the exact same thing. The last one is go and bear fruit. And this is the friend aspect of things, friend slash continued worker aspect of things, but it's like, essentially, this is a repeat the process. And your goal when you're ministering to people, as you're reaching people, is to make disciples who can make disciples. Your goal as your own person is to be a disciple who can make disciples. And as I said at the beginning, none of us are ready for this. We have a tendency to want to think about, well, I'll wait till I've been a Christian for 20 years and I've got it all figured out. I'm the expert. And then I feel like I'm comfortable enough, I've got enough knowledge that I actually have something worth telling somebody. Chef Gusteau was right. You already have enough knowledge that it's worth telling somebody. You already have this ability. Anyone can disciple. It's not as hard as we have oftentimes made it out to be. And honestly, the best way to learn how to disciple and the best way to grow yourself is to put yourself in a mentoring relationship where you're passing along what you have learned. Here's what Dan Spader says at the end. Challenge number 4, go and bear fruit. Right at the end of Jesus' ministry, Jesus had finished his last Passover meal with his disciples in the upper room. They sang a hymn and then made their way to the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus would be betrayed. On the way, Jesus stopped in a vineyard and delivered his famous teaching about the vine and the branches in John 15. And during his final lesson before his arrest, Jesus makes a couple of profound statements. First off, Jesus calls his disciples friends. Throughout the book of John, Jesus' descriptions of his disciples have become increasingly intimate. In John 1, they're called seekers. In John 2:11, they are identified as disciples or followers. And by John 13:13, Jesus calls them servants or co-workers. But now Jesus says, I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. Even Jesus was in a discipling relationship. The Father made known to him, and he passed it along to us. And now we're called essentially to do the same. Jesus moves his disciples to a whole new level of relationship with him. And the reason is clear. He will be going away soon. And they must go and bear fruit. Jesus is now saying, as the Father has sent me, so I am sending you. And the challenge here is this. They are to go and do what he did. They are going to go and repeat the process in others. I have shown you, now go and do likewise. Go make disciples of all nations, doing what I have done with you. The challenge is not easy, but it is simple. I say one of the best ways for us, each one of us, to grow in our walk with Christ is to put ourselves in a position of having to pass along what we have learned. And it's not always just a one-on-one relationship. You know, I think Hillary Clinton says it takes a village. Well, she was wrong. It takes a church. This church is multi-generational. It's one of the beautiful things about church. And there are people around us who we can look to for advice, for suggestions, for help, for knowledge, for comfort, for coming alongside. And it's one of the beautiful things about how the church and the body of Christ works, is that someone who is older can come alongside someone who is younger and walk them through something that they have never experienced and they don't know where to start. Learning faith as we go. This is what we're called to. Let's pray. Lord, opportunities are everywhere. Lord, you said that the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Lord, I thank you for the people who have invested in my life along the way, over the years. People who took me aside and challenged me on things. People who came alongside and encouraged me, comforted me, strengthened me, guided me, led me, taught me, all of those sort of things. Lord, that all of us have had people in our lives who have done this with us, who've taught us about faith, of what it looks like to follow you and to walk with you. Lord, I pray that we would be diligent in noticing those around us who need a little helping hand, who need some encouragement, need some advice, some knowledge, some suggestions, some pointing in the right direction. Lord, I pray you'd help us to, as we step out in faith, that you would give us the words that we need, you'd give us wisdom, and you'd give us the courage to step out and pass along what it is that we have learned. And Lord, in doing so, I pray you would challenge us to grow deeper ourselves, that we would have a hunger for you and a hunger for knowledge of you. And as we increase our knowledge of you, that we would have more and more to be able to pass on to the next generation below us. Thank you for this process. Thank you for modeling it for us. And I pray you'd help us as we walk in your footsteps. In your name, amen.